Recording excerpted.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we are on item 7.
So at the March 8th Board of Retirement meeting, there was a request to provide information to the board concerning written and verbal communications that we provide to our membership concerning improper compensation enhancements and the review process that CSERA goes through of those. So I've included in your packet a number of pages relating to the verbiage that has now been inserted into a number of member communications. We added a disclaimer to our new membership letters and estimate letters that we provide to members, and that began in mid-May of this year. We've added verbiage to member handbooks that are going to be updated on the website soon, the 2016 benefit statements that are going to be mailed out shortly. It was also added there. In our group counseling session presentation, we've added a slide to address that. The counseling application checklist includes that reference to that, where the member also signs acknowledging that, and then also initials each item on that checklist. The employer handbook, which is in the final stages, we've added the text that is attached as well. And then on our website, on the estimate calculators, there's a disclaimer that's now been added concerning that. We have some additional info that Raleigh and Tim are going to be going over. And then there will be a periodic summary provided to the board of the reviews that that have been occurring. So you'll be receiving that on a regular basis. I first wanted to have Tim Hoppe go over some of the verbal communication that's provided to our members.
Okay. Yeah. In addition to during the group counseling sessions, a second slide was added. A disclaimer slide was also added over the presentation, and it's based upon the information known at this time and subject to change. So that's also part of the presentation.
Whether or not I didn't know whether or not to bring this up now or later. It seems to me it might be better to bring it up now and think about this as we listen to the presentations, rather than go back to each one of the items. Looking through the stuff, I thought it was exhaustive and very responsive to the concerns. But one of the things that occurred to me, and I guess I'd like to have the board think about this. I realize there might be some questions about definitions of terms and that sort of thing, but even in the agenda item, we talk about the review of improper compensation, which to me is a key word, improper compensation. That's the item on the agenda, and yet throughout all the follow-up items that you'll see here, we never use the word improper again. So I'm wondering whether or not it might be worth considering defining that. What my concern is that it sounds as if we're sort of saying you can't enhance your final average salary in a proper way. And there are proper ways that you're allowed to do that in your final year of employment. So I'm not a lawyer, but I do understand that if we put the word improper in there, we probably have to define it or attempt to define it. But it seems to me that all these things ought to suggest that we're talking about these people knowing that it's improper increases in their compensation that we're concerned about, not proper. And since it's an agenda item and it's listed that way, but it doesn't appear in any of the follow-up responses. So just to keep it in mind and see if it might make sense to consider adding that word.
So I was kind of thinking along similar lines. It's a great point. And what I'm wondering is, did our council weigh in on this verbiage and how it ties into the law and what we've just went through?
They did.
Okay. So you all were good with the language and believe that should we get ourselves into another situation in the future that this would help strengthen the case where people, code things incorrectly on their timesheet in order to get more for their pension.
It certainly provides additional information to the membership and to the employers about the existing law. Mm-hmm. The existing law did and still does provide the board with authority to make exclusions. The actual term that's used is different in the different statutes. In the PEPRA statutes, they didn't use the word improper. They didn't use the words increased by the member. They used the word enhancement. In PEPRA. In the pension reform.
They used the word what?
Enhancement.
Thank you.
Enhancement. In the prior statutes, they're still in play. The legislature used the words improper increase caused by the member. So maybe the intention is to get to the same exact behavior, but the words that were used are different.
I can add that, excuse me, the word improper appears in one of the statutes that we cited and are now in litigation over. I would hesitate to try at this stage to give a developed definition of that word. Right now, maybe later we'll have.
So that's a two-part question then. Are you also suggesting that we not use the word defined or not defined?
Well, the only place I see it on this matter is on the agenda item description. I don't see it in any materials. I hadn't reviewed the materials before, but they seem to be fine, and they talked about excess or enhancement.
Yeah.
That's probably as close to a definition as we can get, because the board is granted discretion in making determinations as to the motive and intent and effect of excess compensation in the final year. I think it serves the board to not define that further. This is essentially, as I read these materials, they're essentially putting members on notice that you may be given an estimate or something, or you may believe that something's going to be counted, and we may review it later and determine it's not.
Yeah.
So it's really it's a warning. We're Mirandizing our members.
I think
that's fine. I probably didn't articulate this too well. I'm concerned about both ways. One, discouraging, for lack of a better word, the improper increase, but not discouraging people from making the most of their allowable, their proper benefits. I wouldn't want somebody to read this and think that there's no way in which they can take advantage of available statutes and regulations and allow them to take full advantage of that ability to increase their compensation appropriately.
From my perspective, I don't read it that way.
Okay.
As a dampening effect, I read it more as
caution.
Be aware that we're going to scrutinize it.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not improper or proper compensation or excess compensation. It's additional compensation. It is what it is, but it's whether or not that additional compensation qualifies
as pensionable compensation.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that would,
yeah.
Improper just has a negative connotation to it, like you're trying to get away with something. But if you say that you get additional compensation that may not qualify towards your pension, I think that would be better.
Well, I think the policies that the board adopted in 2013, the compensation enhancement review policy, speaks to that if there's something excess, or as the staff goes through, does the review, and there's a fact pattern that just seems a little bit unusual for that member within the context of everybody else in that class, then that's something that we'd bring to the board to discuss, and then based on that individual fact pattern, it might be deemed to be improper. But as far as the elements that would be proper, in 2014, compensation earnable policy, where we looked at, includes everything from terminal pay, the estoppel, vacation sales, work outside of normal working hours, all of these things. There's verbiage in that policy that provides staff some conditions under which something might be included or is included unless it's outside of how it's being defined. So I think that additional clarity, and that's what was encapsulated in the memo today, is how that has evolved over the last few years. Starting in 2013 with the compensation enhancement reviews, and then as the clarification came in 2014 with the compensation earnable and then the pensionable compensation, the PEPRA policy as well, staff continued to work and develop additional review procedures, which by the beginning of 2016, using the comments from the board, some of the meetings that we've had, some internal procedures and process and some tools were developed that they can walk through this so we can have a consistent filter placed on every member when they're retiring. Yeah. In an earlier presentation this year, Tim talked about you using a threshold of 5%. There's a tool that captures individual compensation components. Anything that's in excess of 5%, is flagged. They go through the review. If it seems to be unusual for that individual and put into context with their cohorts in that occupational class, then that's something that Tim would actually review. And we'd ask for source documentation from the employer, timesheets, that sort of thing, just to see what's going on. And then that's where, if there's still some question whether this was proper or improper, then we can actually talk to the member, go to the employer. We've got the initial documentation, and then it would really, it would come back to the board whether or not something was proper or improper.
Okay. Well, appreciate
your
time.
I hate to wade in now, but I'm going to do it. on the very discussion you just so sort of, what's the word I want to use?
Elegantly. Elegantly.
It was eloquently taking it over like at about a 5,000 foot view, but the reality is we've already been in these weeds, right? Mm-hmm. We've been in these very weeds. Right. And the issue is this. If you have a practice that occurs repeatedly over a long period of time, the lesson we learned from the last iteration of this is that if the employer said it was okay and did it, and God forbid our counselors might have encouraged it, our hands are effectively tied here, because even though the employee might have well participated in that and wanted to make that happen, that's not a, quote, improper enhancement. So to me, the lesson from the last 2 years of studying this is to put a premium on precluding the employer practice through audit, through direct oversight, and so forth, mm-hmm. and clearly directing from our own end our counselors and others to not encourage that conduct. Yeah. That seems like that's what we can do. That's within our control. Those are the controllables, right?
Right. I think, and also one of the things is having effective communication with the employers, because we do have in the board regulations that when an employer has a new EARN code, they want to pay an employee a new form of compensation. It needs to be submitted to us for review. And what we're doing is engaging with the employer early on. That we've been talking with them. It will be in the employer guide about how that review process is. And then what we do is we provide an advisory based on the current law at the time, whether or not that would be pensionable or not. And we also memorialize that. We also, with our member services area, we're looking at trending and tracking. So if there's been any change of a pensionable EARN code, and there seems to be some unusual activity, increases in it month over month, that sort of thing, we're looking at ways that we can identify that at an earlier time. So then if there is any disconnect, we won't be in that situation.
For me, after reading all this, I think Scott's issue is an important issue that we need to do, or you need to do, and that is what you're talking about, mm-hmm. addressing the employer, because that's where it seems to start. And our staff followed up unmistakably, with, yeah, it's okay. Well, so if we follow up with the employer, number one, and then number two, this policy, I think, addresses the individual prior to the time that they retire, and they're well aware of it prior to the time that they retire, then I think we are covered in terms of when there's an enhancement in the compensation and we see it as an enhancement of going and taking action. But unless those two things are done thoroughly, I don't think we have, like, I don't think we have a foot to stand on like we did before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's my two cents about it.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Rusty.
Follow up on that, you know, maybe we should have a checklist for the employers to sign, just as we do for the active members who are applying for retirement, just to say that they have read the following and they understand it perfectly.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And then going back earlier on the all the communications here, maybe at least at the end or somewhere in the communications we can reference where they can find additional information, if it's online or if it's by calling the office, because there are terms here like causing or excess comp or improper that might raise questions. And I don't know if you want to attempt to explain them over the phone or just refer them to either the memo that summarizes all these policies we have in the office, explain how these terms apply, or refer them to the policies themselves. But if you can make that available online and show them where they can find it, if they want additional information, I think that would be...
That's a good point, and then that's something that we can incorporate. In rolling out the employer handbooks, one of the things with that is actually having them sign that they have, you know, acknowledging that they have received it. I mean, we can...
Just received?
Yeah, but that receiving doesn't mean they've covered the area about compensation, enhancement compensation.
Yeah, and we are looking at doing more information sharing and education, which is a big piece of the puzzle that we're talking about. Because I think on the one hand, you know, employers, you know, have done certain things over the years, and I think that my sense is that the tide has been turning a bit, especially in the last few years. And especially when we're letting folks know, hey, we're doing this now. And there has been some favorable response from some of our employers on different things that we have been noticing and bringing to their attention. We have seen things change in a number of different areas, and not just on this topic. But that's something that we definitely want to stress going forward. That's one of my own personal goals for this year, is to do more employer outreach and education, because that's a big piece. And
do we do regular sessions at the employer offices, or the county obviously being the biggest employer, but at different department functions? Does Sisera get the opportunity to actually stand in front of the employees and give a brief update and talk about your pension plan?
Generally, that hasn't been something that's happened in the past.
It happened a long time ago. It happens with employees.
Yeah.
Is there any audit role that Raleigh might be able to comment on when you're conducting an audit at the employer's facility? I would assume, as at least in part, you're dealing with some of the people that really capture the information and are responsible for obviously getting that correctly to us. Does that come up?
Is it? Actually, it does, because one of the things that you want to do is frame within the scope of the employer audit, and also what they're aware of, you know, what the policies are. So, you know, the initial contact and communications and discussions are, you know, this is what our policies are, these are the communication pieces. Just recently, one of the employers that we're doing a review this year actually prepared a package for them that had all of the employer communications that we've issued over the last 3 years, because they were in different, you know, they didn't have a clear, you know, track. And actually, that was a good cue for me that, you know, putting that together, that's something that if it does come up, it's a tool that I'll actually use with other employers, because over a period of time, different updates, different, you know, changes as far as reporting compensation, workflow, reporting to Sisera, it has evolved, it has changed. And sometimes it doesn't percolate all the way down at the granular level to the payroll clerk that actually has to do the work. And that's one of the things that when we engage with the employer and we're talking to the people on the ground in the payroll offices, we want to have those conversations with them. So there is that awareness. I've also been asking, you know, how they actually distribute, what their internal distribution list is, because that also gives me a map of who the responsible individuals for the different forms of communication that and reporting that they have to submit to Sisera, because sometimes different employers have two different responsible people just for segregation of duty requirements. So, their own internal controls might require it, but, our member services or our benefits area may only talk to these individuals and not realize that, there needs to be a relation there under the audit and review. So we have a complete picture of what their whole workflow and process is.
Another consideration, the department heads have a meeting every 2 months. Mm-hmm. And it could be a good opportunity every year or so to present, maybe even offer it as a training to all the department heads, your CAO, when you have captured in one room.
That's a very good suggestion.
The challenge I see is, how many payroll clerks do you think we have in the county, Rusty?
Pardon?
How many payroll clerks do you think we have in the county? How many hundreds? I mean, seriously.
No, but at least you're talking to the heads.
But that's what I'm saying. So I think if you did department heads, I think you would need to have some sort of a handout or something.
Certainly,
very
yeah.
simple of a checklist of this is allowed, this is not allowed. Something that could be disseminated, and it's one of the problems because we don't have an appropriate electronic timekeeping system, that we have literally hundreds of clerks entering data. I have in my office with four employees, one designated person who's the payroll clerk for the supervisor's office who enters in everybody's time codes and vacation and, whatever else they're claiming. And so it's inherently fraught with problems. So if we have a very simple, streamlined thing that can be disseminated, and certainly through the auditor's office that, is helpful, but I like your idea of department heads. We've got to make sure the right people.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of the outreach, again, that you're trying to make here, and that's just one opportunity. Of course, the Board of Supervisors have a nice big chamber room where you can
We do. We could
meet.
Make that available for a big meeting anytime someone wants to.
I just think generally that, and I appreciate your sense that this is obviously going in a different direction than it has in the past. I've been here 6 years, and I know that the direction and the general feeling 6 years ago was much different than it is now. And I'm happy that we're moving in that direction. But it will be so easy to, with really just one bad supervisor who takes it upon themselves to...
She doesn't mean a county supervisor.
No, yes. I'm sorry, a manager. No, actually, just could go the other way, too.
Which one are you thinking of, Deborah?
I'm not going to say. But with one bad management personnel, member...
misguided.
Who takes it upon themselves to convey a message to employees and that they believe they can get something more, that's all it takes. And so I think this has to be an ongoing effort throughout time. It shouldn't just be we're on the right track now, so let's move on to other things. And this has to be a part of the culture that goes on forever.
And you know what I would recommend to Gail is maybe sit down with the county's HR director and sort of talk through how does she think would be the best way to disseminate the information to the various departments, because I think that would be, strategize with her about that. I think that would be helpful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good point.
Will.
Post PEPRO, I thought we had on our website essentially all the pay code, the reasons that we determined legally for the different pay codes, the four different our little questions, are those still on the website? Do you know?
The PEPRO pensionable compensation policy?
Is
on the website.
Okay. So I wonder if that's something we could just put it all together in one page. I think CalPERS does, they put this on their website as well, and they talk about it. And it's not just a disclaimer in their calculation, but they have an information thing. Also, I have a question. I think the department head thing is amazing, and I think all the outreach is amazing. One follow-up question I have is, has anybody, both from the county, maybe you can answer this question, Candace, but or from us, made a formal communication to the hazmat department regarding all the pay items and stuff? Like Daniel Bornstein asked, when we were talking about hazmat, who's going to make this communication? And it's been, we've been talking about it for a couple years, a few years now, and I'm just wondering, has anyone formally made communication to the hazmat, or have they decided on all that stuff?
With respect to the on-call specifically, we did a communication back in May, just provided them with an advisory that, you know, at the time of retirement, under the RIV mandate, we're using those tests that when somebody retires, we do an individual assessment. So they have that. With that, we included our compensation earnable policy, which actually in the attachment to that lists each of the items that are normally, you know, included, and then those that are specifically included. And then anything that's outside that where an individual determination needs to be made, that's where we do the individual review, and okay. Tim's team does. So they have that in hand.
Excellent.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Did you finish?
No. Okay. Okay.
I had some additional thoughts, but I didn't want to not say that the level of effort here is much appreciated. I had the opportunity to talk to Gail about this a little bit before the meeting, but the idea that we've pulled together all of these various communications and techniques to try to get the point across is definitely going in the right direction, and I think it's a little bit akin to trying to throw the brakes on a, you know, on an aircraft carrier. It's tough to stop them, let alone turn them. So it takes a lot of effort. But back to Jerry's point, I think the concern I have is this. By the time this issue gets back to us, it comes back to us in the form of a very difficult decision that arose because either a member was denied compensation as part of their final average salary, or some other problem, and it comes to us for some type of resolution. And the problem we had in looking in the rearview mirror with respect to the hazmat folks, without getting into the individual cases and so on, was that when it came down to it, what was, quote, improper was not defined for us. And that became a source of some contention and difficulty here. And so the problem is, I think, that the lesson I got out of the hazmat effort was if an employer and the employee both participate in the misconduct, putting aside whether Cicera did or didn't counsel this particular item, if the employee and the employer both did it, then we are not going to change the compensation because we viewed that as you know, really more of an employer issue than the employee issue. So not to over-lawyer this, but when you get down to causation, who caused it to be improper, we took the view that it has to solely be the employee in every instance or we would never change the compensation. That's really the result of what we did. That's the takeaway. So what I'm trying to figure out is I could see us doing this all over again despite all these best efforts, and they are very good efforts, because on that pivotal issue, we haven't yet grappled with if an employee is viewed to have improperly enhanced compensation, but the employer encouraged it, maybe even had an unwritten policy about it, what are we going to do? The lesson from the last time was we won't do anything, and I am suggesting that that is not a good end result from the standpoint of trying to understand what it is we're supposed to be doing. If the statute says a member shouldn't improperly enhance compensation, does it matter that the employer said it was okay, went along with a wink or whatever? My view, no.
Well, this is where it's going to be important when we're engaging with the employers, because one of the things that we've been doing is we're asking for the documentation, put it in writing. And in the absence of anything that they want to memorialize to us to certify that this is what the arrangement was, this is the conditions under which this compensation was paid, we don't have anything to point to substantiate the inclusion. If all the rest of the facts in the review would lead to it being excluded, then that is the stance that we'd have to take, unless the employer, if there's another contract, another way, another document that they've memorialized that this is the way this compensation has been paid, then I can't see how we'd be able to do that in the future. In the past, we may not have had as clear a communication with the employers on that point. So that's where it was problematic when we were looking back over the past 10 years. But I think as we go forward, when we're doing the reviews, we're communicating with them. Most of the employers now that have had a new earn code or a new type of compensation, they have come to us, and we've been very clear as to what documentation we're asking. And and we always give them that next chance. Is there anything else, you know, that you can provide us that speaks to how this compensation is being paid? And then we provide an advisory back, whether it's going to be includable or excludable. We've even had a situation where a pay item that was pensionable, they changed the manner in which and the conditions under which the employees were eligible, and they included it was for a variable type of compensation, and they added words like it would be a voluntary list, this sort of thing. So all of a sudden, something that was pensionable became non-pensionable because of that. It was for overtime, and it wasn't during their working hours. So and that we engage the employer with that and then provide an appropriate advisory back. So,
I'm thinking more in the joint, for lack of a better term, sort of the joint misconduct framework where you have you have a complicit employer and employee arrangement. However, I'm not going to try to define it specifically because it could vary and would vary by circumstance. So I'm actually thinking that there's probably great utility in having the board adopt as part of its compensation policy a statement with respect to that very scenario, and to make a call at the policy level about whether an employee and an employer acting in concert can result in compensation being found improper. I'm of the view it should be, but that's a debate we need to have here. But I'm beginning to think that that's the case, because I know I'm not trying to put our lawyers on the spot. I mean, we've had this discussion probably a year ago, and I don't think since. So anyway, that's what I think we need to do, and I think Jerry brought up a good point in that regard, because that's some unsettled business.
Harvey's got a thought before you. I'm sorry. I see Harvey over there.
Oh, Harvey, I'm sorry.
Jumping up and down.
I just wanted to suggest that we are in active litigation on a particular matter right now. And so I think it's something that over time what the board has done is look at it on a case-by-case basis and made a determination under the facts and circumstances that were presented to the board in each one. And rather than trying to make a generalization that will apply to every situation, I think board needs to be able to look at the facts each time this is presented to it and make a judgment call on that basis.
Okay, Debbie?
Did you have comments?
No, I was just trying to. Harvey was.
So just I just want to make two observations here. The first one is I think that the employers do have some obligation, and our largest employer and our supervisors of that largest employer should take up the issue of some type of ramification for management department heads being complicit in things like what went on with the hazmat or anything dealing with changing pay or, you know, taking compensation and moving it to one pay code that's pensionable instead of another pay code, that type of manipulation. So I would hope that the supervisors are going to take this up.
Well, and it's something that we're very aware of, and with every MOU, particularly as we're now starting our new rounds of contract negotiations with all of our workforce, that's probably one of the things that comes up in every contract.
But I think that management has to have a consequence for
participating in that. And there was definite discussion amongst the board to David Twa with these issues as they arose about getting them resolved and, you know, going straight to Bill Walker and just saying this
perfect.
Is
what the needs to be my second observation here is that I don't think we would ever really have to have this discussion about employees under PEPRA, correct? Okay, so I'm going to leave you with this thought that lends support for maintaining base pay only, because we essentially with base pay only in PEPRA have removed all the manipulation out of the pay codes.
That being said,
but it's not on the agenda. That's just my observation.
my observation to respond to that is that CalPERS has a number of pay codes for PEPRA members.
They've chosen to do that.
Yes. And I've heard that the sheriffs now have one of the lowest packages available because it's base pay only.
Mm-hmm. And we need to fix that, too.
So,
let's increase the salary. One more comment. Again, we're using the term excess compensation in these communications. And I don't know if it's misleading. It goes back to your point, Jerry, whether it's alarming because you don't know what it means and kind of intimidates you from going for a job promotion, maybe towards the end of your career, in the case that it might backfire on you. And I don't know if we could change that to something more clear, causing a spike in your compensation or an irregular or unusual increase in your compensation, but excess is just, I don't know, it's not clear enough for me.
Or additional that just doesn't qualify for the, I mean, additional compensation is additional compensation, but some of it may not qualify for.
Not to speak for Harvey, but he seemed to indicate that he didn't view this as dampening language.
Right, no, and I heard that. But I don't know if anybody else felt the same way. But, I mean, it is in our disclaimers, and I'm not sure if it would be misunderstood.
Okay. I wanted to just say, because I haven't said this in open session, in my day job, I work with CICERA staff, and I can attest that, anecdotally, that what they're saying is actually procedures have changed. We've had members who are part of a class that recently started using a new pay code that is pensionable and everything, and someone in that class retired, and it threw a flag, and we were getting the emails from TEM staff saying, you know, we need this is unusual activity in his FAS, and provide us a. So we had our HR manager opine on it, the department manager opine on it, and they still said that's not sufficient. We need documentation. Where did you put in writing that it's mandatory? And there was a lot of back and forth, and finally, HR staff found the actual document that, you know, was conclusive. So I just wanted out there that they are actually in practice doing exactly what they say they're doing before us today.
So. Thank you for saying that. I think that that's important, and to know that we have changed the process and we have something better going on than we had before.
And I'd say in the case that Todd just mentioned, I mean, there were two instances. One was the pay code that mm-hmm. came up. And the second one is when it started. Mm-hmm. We'll go back 36 months, and I think it was probably, what, about 18 months back mm-hmm. that it actually went. And so it comes up of, did somebody start taking on, you know, we can call it, you know, similar like on-call or something. Did they just start picking this up because they knew they were going to retire or not? But through all the research and documentation provided, no, the benefit didn't start, or the change took place, July, August of 15, and that's when the form of compensation started being reported.
Yeah, it was a divisional change, you know, for the needs of the district, and nothing related to the individual himself, other than that he was at the end stage of his career.
Right.
Jerry, it's not off topic, but Candace brought this up. It's interesting. This may already appear in an MOU, but as you mentioned, you were working with.
Well, all of our labor groups are up.
Correct, they're all up. Yeah, they're all and I'm wondering up. If there is a disclaimer, there may already be one, or if the board might want to consider something that suggests in every one of the MOUs that all the items here, while we are compensable, mm-hmm. they're part of our agreement, we will pay for them. A determination as to whether or not all items are pensionable is not made by us. Or something to that effect.
Well, but it kind of is. I mean, because we're deciding base pay. By CICERA or by us? I mean, CICERA doesn't want that responsibility of deciding what base pay is. I mean, so I don't know if you might muddy the water with that.
Okay.
I'm just saying, because I think we as a board have always said, make the employer make that decision of what's base pay.
But it's those extras. It's the on-call. It's the mandatory other. You know, potentially in that you could, but I don't know. I think most labor groups are going to want a little more certainty going forward.
It's just that subject seems to come up all the time, and we hear that, you know, my employer paid for it, so it's pensionable. It's two different topics, obviously. Yeah.
Well, and that, and I guess we just, from my seat, I would prefer as the employer to be able to say, this is pensionable, this is your base pay, this is additional work you may take on at your, you know, choice. It will not be pensionable because it's not required work. I mean, right. So I'd rather have that clarity in an MOU.
Why I'm wondering.
So to clarify, the employer MOUs with the employees say nothing about pensionability. The law, the SERL, says that the retirement board determines pensionability under the law.
There you go.
That's what I'm suggesting. It's something along those lines, that it's it's not the employer that makes the determination as to what is pensionable.
But you want it in every MOU.
By default, under PEPRA, they are determining that by defining what base pay is.
I'll bring it up, Jerry.
Just a thought.
Okay.
And I take responsibility for getting you off track an hour ago.
No, it's fine. It was a good conversation, some good takeaways.
So Tim could go over.
One of the questions, you know, I think you were asking was related to what is communicated and talking points or having a script. When the counselors meet with members and so forth. And what we found is each one of these conversations is unique. The education or how informed the member is and how often they come in varies from member to member.
Of course.
And so the counselors follow the counseling checklist as they go through the communication, then it's securing the documentation, the timing of payments, now the notice regarding, you know, compensation enhancements and so forth. Every member or retiree is required to sign it, submit it, and sign it. And in various portions, they also initial sections acknowledging that they read and understood what's happening there. And the same with group counseling. There isn't an exact script because it really depends upon the audience.
Okay,
but
fair enough.
Talk about retirement, you know, the calculating retirement benefit, it is very clear, you know, it's based on, you know, 1, 2, 3, you know, these components. And they do not go into how to make it go higher beyond, you know, it's work longer, get older type of thing. They're not, you know, I say encouraging, directing any type of activity or actions such as, you know, taking that on. And if it does come up, you know, we will have somebody, you know, it's probably every other session. And we run about 25 individuals every session. It does come up. And it's usually, they're reviewed on a case-by-case basis, and we'll, you know, prepare an estimate, we'll run through it, and, you know, come up for them. However, we cannot determine if, say, on-call is pensionable or includable in the FAS until you actually retire and we do the full analysis, and we follow the policy when we do that analysis.
Right, okay.
And part of that as well, knowing that member situations are somewhat unique, obviously, it's even more important that we have training and education for our staff so that when they are, you know, pose questions that they don't go into kind of gray areas and that type of thing. And that's something that we've been doing quite a bit of training with our staff on an ongoing basis, and it's something that's going to be continuing as well in the future. So that we don't have folks that are venturing out in areas because they don't know, so they're guessing. And so there's,
So on the note on your checklist here, where you talk about notice regarding compensation enhancements, I'd like to add a part to that at the end where it says either before or after you retire, depending on when the determination is made.
Yeah.
So that they understand it's not going to be certain before you retire when you apply whether or not all these pay codes qualify. We might make that determination until later.
It's an excellent point.
Yeah, that's to add emphasis to that in your pension spiking presentation, the slide, the addition to the deck. I had the same thought, which I think is an excellent thought, because that first bullet basically says at the time of your retirement. I'd like to have us consider adding words that says something like your pension calculation semi prior to or following your retirement. Now, we do say that later on, but we don't necessarily say it in this presentation. But because just because you got that thing punched on the way out doesn't mean that there might not be circumstances at some later date that we would question.
Right.
So just the addition of something that says you're not home free, if there's something that comes up later on, we may question it. And we already talked about that in the handbook.
Well, now that two people have suggested it on the board, it really is a brilliant thought. So. the thought that I had was not.
This is not a cabinet meeting with the president, you know. You don't have to.
I'm blessed to be here with
That's
you.
Right. Her hair's never looked better.
Oh, my God.
Check, please. Chairman, what I would suggest, I was going to suggest on item 9, is there are two threads of things to being discussed by the board here, and I think we've got one of them in number 9 and not the other. And I would say, I would call it notice regarding pensionable compensation. And then start with, please note that not all of your compensation will be pensionable. That's the way the statute's written. Not all compensation is pensionable. And then say, further causing excess compensation at the end of your career may be deemed an enhancement. That's the enhancement review and evaluation is only one leg of what we do here. The classic job that we do is we look at all the elements. I stood up here 9 years ago with a picture of a coffee filter trying to explain not all the compensation that goes in comes out as pensionable. And that's the classic analysis that the board has engaged in forever, ever since Ventura, when this really became the issue. And as you take all the compensation, and it's mostly for classic members now, or for legacy members, tier one, because we are base pay only for Pembroke. But for tier one members, you start with base pay and all these other elements and pay codes and stuff, and they go in the top of the filter. And only some of them filter through to your pension check. And that's the concept we need to get in. That's separate and apart from then the overlay of, well, even if some of those elements get through, were they somehow wrongfully enhanced in your end of the career? And they got to be kicked out, too. We've gone from coffee to espresso. So that's really the point. So I think adding into number 9 a statement, a clear statement, so that everybody signs off and says, yeah, I understand that not everything that shows up on my paycheck as compensation is pensionable compensation. And that can always be evaluated by the board. We can just add that language in there.
That's a good point. Thank you, Harvey.
Thank you. I one of the things that jumped out to me, just going through the materials, and by the way, I was very pleased that both of you knew what I read. When we jump to the next page, the following text is being added to the employer handbook. Then you drop down to, you've got one, preventing pension spiking. Two, you drop down to audits, and we've got in at the end of that paragraph, and inconsistent pay raises throughout a member's career. I would think we would want to say, and inconsistent pay raises during a member's final year of service. But let me, we're getting into the weeds, and I knew that was part of the weeds. That isn't the final. I just want to bring that to your attention as a possible change. That's how I would expect to read it, as opposed to throughout your career. That isn't what we're really wrestling with here. We're wrestling with that final year.
Right.
So anyway, let me throw that out and not ask unless anyone has a driving interest in expanding on that. That is in the weeds, but it jumped out to me as something, again, we want to focus on, and I think clearly our conversation is focusing on that.
Where were you, Mr. Chairman? Where was that?
Just following the checklist, we've got a page that says the following text is being added to the employer handbook. And then it's under the audit audits section right at the end.
What page is
it? It doesn't have a page number.
It's the page after the checklist?
It's the page after the checklist.
Throughout a member's career, yeah. You're suggesting during the final average salary.
Right, exactly.
Well, I think that was actually a little bit purposeful because under the audit, we want to actually have a filter and the employer and the employee be aware of that if we detect an improper use of an approved pensionable pay code when we're doing the payroll audit, for instance, we want to have some support that we've notified the employer, the employee is also maybe made aware, and then we can question that when we're actually looking at the payroll record, the source record that employer is reporting to us. So with our trending and tracking, if we see somebody goes from one pay period receiving a certain amount of one particular pay code and all of a sudden they get 40% more, we want to be able to question that through their career.
It did enter my mind that you might have had that kind of a purpose. That's why I throw it out. I think our primary focus is in that final year.
Right, right.
But obviously that final year is impacted when being compared to prior years, and if it's improper throughout, it doesn't look as improper in the final year, but our focus is that final year.
Right. Well,
and
right,
I think exactly. What we could do is amend it and just add, you know, leave throughout a member's career and keep it broad, which we'd like, and then put including the member's final average salary period.
I wanted to do was sort of highlight what jumped out to me and then let you work on what the.
But you're not just looking at the FAS, you're looking at the year or two preceding the FAS.
That's right. Getting both into that sentence clearly is an improvement overnight.
That's
my question. When you mentioned previous years before to the final average salary year, how far back are you going to go? Suppose somebody 20 years ago made way more with compensations than they're currently making. Are you going to go back to that 20-year year, or how far back are you going
to
go?
Well, to the extent, and Tim can talk about this a little bit as well, to the extent that it's in our compensation record that they've reported to us, we could probably go back to the first appearance in their pay.
All right, I wanted some clarification on my own, how far back you go. That's good. Thank you.
Well, while we're on this page, and I don't know if it's necessary, but under enhancement review, everybody's smiling. Towards the end there, where it starts, there could be other types of pay deemed to be excludable compensation enhancements, comma, either before or after retirement. Do we need the word determined either before or after retirement? The word determined, I don't know. Just seemed to...
What bothers you about that word? I see.
Without the word determined, it just seems like, you know, the enhancement could happen either before or after.
Presumably couldn't happen after.
No, that's a good.
That's good.
And also, after this one,
after they retire.
We were smiling, right? We like it.
But going back to benefit statements, we left out the word excess, where it says aware that causing excess compensation at the end. Word excess is missing. I believe it should be inserted. Right? That's all I have.
Excess.
Causing excess compensation?
Will be excluded. Okay.
But now, this particular example in that paragraph, the word improperly appears.
It does.
Yeah. It's in there.
Does it make sense for the board to have this brought back to us with the changes at this point?
We're not done yet.
No, okay. In other words, there's an ongoing process.
We've had some discussion about stuff that needs to maybe be looked at and changed a little bit in wording. So
yeah.
I don't know why it hasn't been brought back.
Huh? Well, that's really my question. Is this something we would like to see again?
I'm looking for a sense
of the board, I guess, here.
Final form.
I don't feel the need to see it again so long as... It seems to me that you've gotten the essence of what we're trying to do. And certainly, I think the response up to this point has been excellent. And we were looking for the consistency from item to item. Mm-hmm. And we're looking for trying to make sure that on a going forward basis, this doesn't come back to us as a problem,
yeah,
knowing full well that something will.
It's an informational item. It's not an action item.
So exactly. I'm envisioning that periodically, without trying to pin down what periodically means, there will be educational presentations to the board on how we are dealing with spiking issues.
Uh-huh.
And it's a very natural point to relook from time to time and have the board react and hopefully enhance even further what we're doing, but or be fully comfortable with it. But so I what I'm hearing on that, and don't want to generate work that you don't need to do, is we don't need to have this brought back in any near term. But proceed as you're proceeding and amending our documents, our procedures with employers. And I know the board has been very supportive of encouraging, enhancing our audits of our employer groups.
For me, I'm on the same boat as you. The procedures with employers came out of this, and I think that was very important. And the direction has been given. I feel comfortable with that. I really like 1, 2, 3, 4 steps that are going to be taken when interviewing with a prospective retiree. I think it makes it plain to them on an individual basis where we are and what we see and what we're looking for. So I'm pretty much satisfied with how that's going. I think it gives us a better foot to stand on down the road if both issues are covered and dealt with. So I'm good.
Just going back to your point again, I don't know if there's a policy on policies, how often they have to be reviewed by the board, but whenever policies related to this come up, maybe that's when they can update us on how things are going. Okay.
Policy on policy.
You got my meeting.
You guys are starting to sound like Bart.
Those are fighting words.
So
exactly.
So in the past, a number of our policies don't have verbiage in them that say, oh, after so many years, we'll review the policy and that type of thing. It's something that we've been doing,
right,
you know, more over the last few years we've actually, in the fall, we amended one to include that language. To kind of help close the loop on this, after we're going to take all of your comments, and I do appreciate all of them. You know, a team of us here looked through and came up with this, but it's always good to have another set of eyes on them. So once we make the edits, I will provide you with copies of them to just kind of close that loop, and you can take a look at them again. And then it's probably a good segue as far as the periodic reports. They can talk for a moment about the reviews that have been going on, and then going forward, I anticipate providing an abbreviated report to the board on the reviews that we, you know, did over the last quarter or something like that.
Good. One last thing before you do that. I'm sorry. This was thrown at me one time years ago, so I'm going to goof up the quote, but it was something about consistency being the hobgoblin of small minds or something like that. But there is something to be said, I think, for consistency from item to item, so that it doesn't look like it's a committee. So if you've stovepiped this in terms of reviewing the language that appears in these various things, it'd be important, I think, to make sure that they do say the same thing in each one of these vehicles. And then on a going forward basis, I don't know who takes responsibility for this, but somebody in the future is going to say we should change the handbook on this item. And somebody's going to forget that means you've got to change this, and you've got to change that, and you've got to change that, and you've got to change that. So hopefully there'll be, you know, as long as we're adding something on this particular issue, let's make sure that you have your own checklist inside that says we need to check the slides, we need to check the statement for the review, we need to check everything else to make sure that it's consistent. Thoughts?
Okay. I absolutely
That's it.
Agree.
Yeah. Not a just an observation.
Yeah, it's like a list of sections affected. If
right.
you do this and
right.
this and this
yeah.
all
right.
get triggered to at least get looked at.
Because my concern, of course, would be in the future somebody says, well, that's not what it says in your handbook.
Yeah.
It may say that on the website, but it doesn't say that in your handbook, and it, you know, et cetera, that kind of stuff.
Okay, good. Can staff make changes to the handbook from time to time?
Yeah.
Changes?
Yep.
Such as this, we
With your
had
approval.
An edit at times. Yeah.
So does it make sense for there to be a board approval on certain changes to the handbook?
Or just a recommendation? I think that if you need a formal motion.
I mean, I don't know. Figuring it getting too far down in the weeds, but...
My immediate instinct is to be very cautious about us getting into something that really is ongoing operational, other than review and comment. But
yeah,
the final responsibility is not with the board.
Yes, but I know how it goes through time, and that's probably how we got to where we are now. We go through time, administrators leave, management leaves, employees leave, new people come in, and they don't know the reason why something got put in the handbook. And so a new management person comes in and looks at the handbook and goes, well, that doesn't make sense. Let's change that. But... yeah, so I don't know how you stop that.
We're always going to have that.
Going back to Jerry's idea, and I don't know if you got this already established, but do we have a citation index or something that indexes where, you know, a topic is addressed in each one of our policies or other documents? Do we have something like that?
So something that we're working on right now is actually identifying each of the policies, the actions that need to take place and at what interval, and that's part of a review that, you know, we're working on putting that document together. So that is in the works.
So if somebody wanted to look up the term spiking, they can go to the index, find the word term spiking, and find every policy that might have reference to that. Or other related documents.
What I'm working on isn't exactly like that, but that is something. I mean, I am looking at different things that we can do to increase the documentation of institutional knowledge, because there's been a number of things that would be very, worthwhile to have, a timeline and history on of certain, items.
Right.
So, yeah. Okay. That's a good point.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, as far as periodic reporting through the Benefits Department, Tim's group put together, what has occurred since 2013 to May 2017? And on this table, you'll see about midway through compensation earnable reviews. Those are when we're looking at the individual, and Tim's group is looking at the individual components that are being considered for final average salary, and then possible compensation enhancements that have been escalated to the board. So there's actually five different types of compensation review. The first four are enunciated in the compensation earnable policy, related to, vacation, sales, the estoppel class, working outside, overtime, all of those items. And then the last test, even in that, it actually refers back to the 2013 compensation enhancement policy, where there's a process and procedure that, if a fact pattern is presented, then that is prepared, reviewed, and then brought before the board for consideration. So, and the metrics you'll see from the left-hand side, starting at the year on the table, the total benefit calculations that are done by the Benefits Department. And then as you go to the right of the table, you'll actually see how it moves through the process, what's being escalated for review, what is escalated to Tim's desk as a benefits manager to review, and then just some broad strokes on what the types of compensation. Over the last few years, predominantly it's been on-call that has been reviewed. Just because the conditions under which we want a better understanding as well, on how that compensation has been paid.
Wally, can I ask that you do this yearly for us?
Yearly?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just once a year, pop it in for us. This is really kind of good information just to get an overview. Thank you.
Okay. And then on the next page, on page 6 of the memo, you'll see that the escalated reviews of final average salary compensation calculations by employer. And so we were able to drill down into the departments in the county and then also specific districts. So, yeah. So any questions or additional items on that you'd like to see? That'd be helpful.
Yeah.
nice report.
I'm not sure I can line up which color.
Yeah, I can't.
29 which line item does it pertain to?
Health services, health not services. Sent.
All right. And not surprising.
David, do you concur?
I'm not sure if it's health services or housing authority.
So this is something that Tim's department can put together. They already have the tracking. They're capturing this information as they're doing the reviews. So on an annual basis, if that makes sense. But to the earlier comment, as things come up and as it's pertinent, Tim, the benefits department, or myself, or even member services could provide some information sessions, you know, especially if there's a change. If Karen's made us aware of a change in legislation, then, you know, we do an impact analysis on what we would need to change in the back office as far as process and procedure.
Todd, I got a question for you. I'm pretty familiar with the county's areas of where they can, where final average salary compensations can be made. What's Central Sands? What are some of the stuff that Central Sands can increase their final average salary with?
So standby is one.
Standby?
Mm-hmm, where they're really looking at it. Our operators working, getting a premium pay for working holidays, and some years it falls where they hit all the holidays, including our double holidays, and some years they don't. And so it would raise a red flag.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
So this memo you prepared, I noticed it's all part of the same item 7. So I understood it to be a communication that would be shared with the employers. Is it meant to be shared with? Besides
the way this was packaged was for the board, but it's something that we could discuss, and we could do a periodic, potentially do a periodic communication to employers.
I mean, some of these folks, as items are escalated, we're seeking additional guidance and documentation, and so the ones impacted generally are aware that this is occurring. But yeah, I think.
But I think if you share
part of the communication to employers,
yeah,
you can show them. Yeah,
they can see where they measure up. I wouldn't necessarily get the table portion of it unless you want it. But it helps all the employers be aware of the other employers, you know, how they stack up against each other and this issue.
Yeah, I see this. Attention. I guess the current nomenclature is heat charts, something along that line.
Yeah.
Yeah, this to me, yes, it's a huge department. Yes, it has lots of different policies and whatnot, but this is a heat chart that says to me that there ought to be ongoing communications with this county health services department to make sure that there's a clear understanding of, and you know, what is acceptable or improper, not proper, even if it just requires clarification. And hopefully, in the years to come, I would hope that this pie chart would change
a little bit.
it wouldn't represent 50% of the escalated questions.
Right.
No, but health services is the largest. I mean,
I get it, but is it 50% of the county?
The pie chart's going to change just the overall numbers that are going to.
Because I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. Some of these, I think, are educational issues. That once they are educated down to the clerical staff as to how it should be coded or not coded or what, that we'll see this change on a going forward basis.
If county health services had more than 50% of the total retirees, then this would look just fine.
Correct. Retirees or employees?
No, those retiring that year is my starting number. So you don't know the proportionality of the number of employees who retired.
That's the actuary talking to you.
Well,
the numbers are coming through.
It could be 60%. This could be a wonderful number. So I'm trying not to beat up on David.
Good call, Joe. Good call. Yeah.
Okay. Any further comments on this? I nicely done.
Yeah.
This is probably a good time to, unless you two have anything further you want to share.
No.
Probably a good time to take 5 minutes, at least.
Thank you. It was good work. There was a lot of
recording excerpted.